Well, Mr. and Mrs. American Parent, it's time for you to ask yourself a tough question. Yes, you. And that question is, will your great-great-granddaughter be able to survive in a world without a second eyelid and her own tech claw? Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Whittle here with Steve Green and Scott Ott, and this is your grim warning of a future that is coming and is unavoidable, and what you can do to prepare for it. We turn to the sun, that beacon of integrity. I'm sorry, beg your pardon, the Daily Star. They all get mixed up for me. And we learn the story of Mindy. It's a computer rendering of what the people of 2100 will look like. And folks, it ain't pretty. Looking at this 3D rendering of the humans of the future, we see some of the following features. Hunched backs and arched back and neck. We see a thick skull and smaller brain. Second eyelids to protect against accidental exposure to daylight. And, of course, the tech claw. I've seen people like this in shopping malls all the time. Now, Steve, let's start with you. The reason I'm picking this story is so I can tell my very favorite story of all time, which I've never had a chance to tell before. That's simply this. I was 19 years old. We were walking into Jack Horkheimer's office at the Miami Planetarium. In front of me was a short, stout guy who nobody particularly liked. He was kind of an ass little guy. In front of him was a regular guy who was a technician. And then I came in third, and I was, 6'1" and probably 140 pounds. And as we walked into the room, I turned to Jack and I said, you know, this looks like one of those charts of the evolution of man. But I'm not joking. If you look at this person, as serious as I can be now, you see the hunch, and you, everybody knows the drawing we're talking about. There's a gibbons and chimps, and then Neanderthal, and finally there stands a Homo sapiens, and then now it starts to go down a little bit. It's starting to digress, which makes me want to conserve things. And how about you?
Yeah, we are not. Are we not men? We are Devo, Devolution.
Devo.
One of my favorite movies, it's a little dated, it's so very much 1979, 1980, is a little comedy called Simon with Alan Arkin, and he plays this sort of low-rent psychology professor at a community college or something that this top-secret think tank hires because they want to mess with his mind, convince him he's an alien, and set him loose on the world just to see what happens, because it's one of these think tanks with an unlimited budget, and they kind of like pranking the whole country. And there's this brilliant scene where they've kept him locked up in his own sensory deprivation tank for like a week until his brain turns to porridge. And Alan Arkin, in this brilliant bit of physical comedy, gets out of the sensory deprivation tank in his wetsuit. And as he crawls out of the tank and starts to walk, he goes through the stages of man in the chart. It's an absolute brilliant bit, and I guess now if you play that in reverse, you'll see exactly what we're talking about. I don't know what to do about this. I really don't. You know what I would rather do? You're going to talk about the bad stuff. Let me talk about the empowering part, the good stuff, and then we'll all go back to being cranky old bastards after that. The Navy's new Virginia class attack subs, the stealthiest, deadliest boats ever put underwater, have this high-tech electronic mass. So instead of having, the huge old-fashioned periscope that goes up that, you can see for miles and miles away on radar or whatever, it just has this little slender fiber optic rod that is invisible to radar and hardly does anything. But the Navy didn't know what they were going to do to control this thing, and they were coming up with ideas for like multi-million-dollar controllers to make this thing work. And what they settled on was an off-the-shelf Xbox controller. And the best part is, you don't even have to train the troops, the sailors, to use it. You give them an Xbox controller, and they're up there scouting around with this jillion-dollar fiber optic cable. So, in a sense, the good side is this technology empowers us to do things that we could never do before. And I suppose, now that I've done the bright and sunny side, you're going to have to tell us at what cost, huh?
Well, at the cost, it looks like Mindy has spent 19 years, just a little bit further back than the CIC, and spent 19 years in the actual reactor room. she's not looking well.
She's working on her core.
Scott, when you look at these pictures, the thing that the thing that made me really seriously want to do this this story was I wasn't sure at first if it was kidding or not, because truthfully, honestly, this is a scary looking pose. This is a person who's going to have serious problems in terms of their posture for the rest of their life. And I see people like this all the time. I mean, without exaggeration, all the time. What do you do about this? I mean, is this inevitable? It seems to be inevitable, given the way that most parents are actually doing the same thing while their kids are becoming ever more horizontal, you know, looking at the smartphones. What's the way out of this?
Well, there's quite a confluence of forces at work here and different trends that kind of intersect and clash with each other as well as complement each other. And by the way, that little evolutionary chart, I always thought that that chart should go from, you know, the gibbon to the chimp to the mountain gorilla to the, you know, Neanderthal, Cro-Magnon, and Homo sapiens sapiens, you know, as it goes all the way up. And then when you got to that fully erect one, the next guy should actually be leaning backward a little bit. And so
resting against him.
And eventually should do like a full, you know, hands on the ground behind him kind of thing. But the reason I say that there are these conflicting trends is the ubiquitous presence of video in the hands of young people these days has actually led them to be able to see and become interested in things that they never otherwise would have done. Many of these things are what we would categorize as extreme sports, things involving snowboarding and mountain climbing and, you know, those crazy bicycling guys who are riding along the top of a, you know, 4-inch wide cliff at the top of a mountain. I was just looking at a story about a guy who just climbed El Capitan with no ropes and just, you know, completely barehanded up there. One of my sons, who's very active in, you know, online stuff and in, you know, using his phone for video and games and stuff like that, also goes to this place several times a week where he pretends to climb mountains. It's one of these artificial climbing wall kind of things. And I think it used to be back in the day when a new snowboarding or skiing trick was developed, there would be one guy who owned that trick for a while, you know, because nobody really could do it. Now, as soon as that trick goes online, there's like 1,000 guys who are waiting to see what the next latest trick is, and they're out there emulating it. And so, oddly enough, it depends on how you use it. This technology has, I think, actually fostered more and more aggressive outdoor activity that involves physical activity than otherwise might have happened. That said, there are a lot of people who are perfectly content to let other people in the world exert themselves, and they will just sit there and stare. Perhaps the only thing is, the difference is that when we were watching TV in my house as a kid, we were sitting upright on a tufted, tight-backed velvet sofa. So we had to have good posture because my grandmother would not tolerate us slouching over at the table. But what were we doing? We were, you know, watching the Brady Bunch. We were watching some you know, entertainment on TV. Entertainment has changed. Now it's in the palm of your hand. Someday they will be mounting it on helmets in front of your face, or perhaps even glasses. I have an idea. Why don't we project it onto the inside of a glass? We should get with Google about that. I don't think that there's as big as a scare involved. I don't think that this vision is going to come to fruition, as one of my friends engaged in malapropism years ago. I do think it's a risk personally, and I think you need to look at your own life and go, hey, am I really sucking up hour upon hour just scrolling through social media or just staring at my phone? And if so, isn't there like a world out there?
Why wouldn't your grandmother tolerate the bad posture?
It seemed to me that she had good posture because she had been taught to sit well. And the only when her posture eventually went downhill was because her spine literally began to degenerate and it was not possible for her to sit up as straight. But well into her bout with Alzheimer's, she would sit straight as a ramrod at the table when she couldn't even remember why she was doing it.
Well, if she's not on camera or being interviewed for an Emily Post article, why would she insist on this? To me, parents who insist on their kids sitting up straight do it so that they don't develop these chronic back and neck problems that last for the rest of their lives and condemn many people to the 20 final years of their life to looking at the tiles on the floor.
And I think there's a sense that that's what civilized people do. Civilized people sit up.
Yes, for a number of reasons. I have seen more times than I can count, and you can, and everybody watching this has as well. Just the last time I saw it was just a few days ago. A family goes into a Five Guys hamburger place. The mom and the daughter and the son are all on their devices. They're all working on different things, and they're not doing astronomy, and they're not looking at the latest pictures from Pluto, and they're not even learning spaceport tricks. They're playing Candy Crush kind of games where they're moving little flashy things around. Like, bloop, bloop,
no screens at the table.
And they walk down and they get it from the thing. Now look, I know how this sounds. I mean, I know how it sounds, and I also know that if I'd had one of these as a kid, I'd never leave the house. But you have to leave the house. And so the question I have is a serious, serious question now. Either this will continue or it won't. I think that's a fairly reasonable assumption on my part. And what I mean by that is this. Either the world will continue to become more and more digital, where the skill set that this young generation has, and they are astonishingly fast on these machines and processing multiple sources of information, either the world where that ability becomes essential, and also, how am I trying to put this? If that world becomes fact, then the support system for people who are hunched over all the time and who never go outdoors has to also be in place. Somebody has to be out there getting the food and the resources and running the electric power plants and so on. So if that world is there, then that's problematic. If most of the people in the country are sitting hunched over computers or cell phones or whatever, what is the quality of human life in that regard? And much more compelling to me, and I think more likely too, is that it won't last. And then what do you do? You know, what do you do with your tech claw if it turns out that now you have to, you know, pull apples off of trees? This is dangerous ground. And when you're talking about a device that is so addictive and so compelling that parents are sitting next to kids who are literally, honestly, truthfully, 90 degrees away from the vertical, you have to start asking yourself, at what point does this miracle become more than a miracle and become an addiction and become something that is very, very dangerous, both physically and mentally, I suspect. Anyway, Mindy, you need to sit up. You need to put the phone down. You need to open both those eyelids, and then you need to go for a walk. For Steve Green and Scott Ott, I'm Bill Whittle. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week on Right Angle.